It's Mike Malloy. Thank you for joining me tonight around the campfire. One of the few remaining progressive lights in the darkness that is descending on this country, thanks to the right-wing night crawlers. This is church night, by the way. It is Wednesday. We have a couple of church things tonight. Wednesday is always church night on the Malloy program to varying degrees, because Wednesday's are the nights when fundamentalist Christians usually have their prayer meeting. Certain fundamentalists. I know I did when I was a kid. Southern Baptist Church in Findlay, Ohio. With my grandparents. Prayer meeting night every Wednesday. It's quite an experience. That's why we do it. Regular listeners of the program have heard that little tale many times told. So tonight is church night. We will drop in a few items tonight regarding various religious craziness. It is the summer solstice. As a matter of fact, we're 2 hours and exactly 2 hours into it. 1 minute short of 2 hours into the summer solstice. Unless you're listening in Australia, in which case it is the winter solstice. But this is the longest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. How many of you, let me see some hands up, how many of you took Latin in high school? Ah, quite a few, huh? Now, I'm not talking about you Catholics. I'm talking about just, you know, not in a parochial school, public school. Yeah, I took 2 years of Latin, and I am so grateful, even though I think I flunked it, but I am so grateful for having had a Latin teacher who had terrible breath. Oh, my God, she had bad breath. And she was German, but she was a great Latin teacher. So, solstice is from the Latin solstitium, which is a equivalent to, well, sol equals sun, of course, and the S-T-I-T is a combination or combining form of sistere, to make stand, or to bring to a halt, to make something stand still. So the summer solstice is really about the sun stopping its apparent northern movement. For a moment, the sun stands still. If you live here in the northern hemisphere, it does. And then it begins its journey south. You didn't know that, did you? So anyway, 2 hours ago, right now, 2 hours ago, the sun stopped its climb, relatively speaking, to the farthest point north of the equator. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. So there you go. Now, of course, it was a scorcher for Americans today. Heat wave in the Northeast, breaking records all over the place. Oh, but don't worry. It doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean a thing. Doesn't mean a thing. You know, it's summer. We're 2 hours into summer. So what do you expect? Yeah, right. Anyway, happy summer solstice. I hope at some point this evening you will go outside in the darkness, preferably. If you live in the city, then you're going to have to get out of town. You go out in the country, find a nice, friendly patch of forest. Make sure you put on a lot of the summer scent bug juice, anti-bug juice that you can get from Heal and Hollers. God, I love that stuff. Oil your body up. Go outside into a nice, friendly patch of woods. Take off all your clothes. Everything. Just strip right down to total nudity and dance. Hopefully with a partner or six or 12. The only way to celebrate the summer solstice is to do it totally naked out in the woods. And if you can get some people to join you, do a joyful dance around, I don't know, a tree stump or a dead Republican, whatever. But that's how you celebrate the summer solstice. Dance naked. Do, 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 do. How about that Ron Paul? What's Ron Paul's biggest complaint? It's Social Security, right? It's unconstitutional. It's a scam. It's a Ponzi scheme. He says that when he gets his Social Security check every month and deposits in the bank, right? he was on Morning Joe this morning on MSNBC, and he admitted that he accepts Social Security checks. Yeah, all right. Now, right before he admitted that, of course, he admonished the younger generation to wean themselves off the program. He said, quote, "I want young people to opt out of Social Security. But my goal isn't to cut." Cut what? You know, if he's so against Social Security, well, they send it to me. They send it to me every month. What am I supposed to do? Isn't that the way he talks? Well, they send it to me every month. If I need a Social Security, my weird son would have to take care of me. I don't want that. I don't live with him. You want to live with somebody named Rand? Oh, my God. But if Ron Paul is so much against Social Security, here's a suggestion for you, Ron. Mail the check back. They sent it to me. It's just like I use the post office. I use government highways. I use the banks. I use the Federal Reserve System. Blah, 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 blah. What a freak ass. Every single one of these, to be a libertarian is a goddamn joke. Any libertarian, I don't care if you're a left libertarian or a right libertarian, give me an effing break, okay? Libertarian, my butt. Okay, not so much the left libertarians. I can cut you guys and gals a little bit of slack. But right-wing libertarians, what a joke. What a joke. I got a couple of emails here I want to show with you, whatever, pick one. This is from Drew in Hammond, Louisiana, who wrote last night, "I was just listening to you lay out a gauge of your audience age, and I think I fall into the younger area of your demographics. I'm soon turning 30, and I listen to you to maintain a semblance of sanity while living in the Deep South. Older people I've met think I'm naive to be a liberal, but hell, I'm a goddamn socialist. I'm an atheist who has grown up in the Bible Belt, slowly pulling my hair out, wondering why Christians have so many damn problems with helping out the poor. I have a relative who's a pastor, and when joking around about the weirdo aunt of his family, he mentioned that the weirdo votes against the Republican Party. This is a pastor. This relative, whose parents are 54 and 51. This is a pastor whose 21-year-old sister has had open heart surgery twice. This is a pastor whose brother is gay. This is a pastor whose unborn child didn't develop the top portion of a cranium after 4 months in the uterus, and his wife had to have a medical procedure to remove this non-viable fetus or possibly die herself. And this pastor considers the aunt who doesn't vote for the party, who would, one, tell his parents that they are just young enough to get their medical care on the open market when they retire, two, that his sister should be denied health care, and three, that his brother's a second-class citizen, if he's a citizen at all, and four, that his wife should be in prison. He considers her a weirdo." all while that party promotes a social justice policy that is the direct antithesis of the things his own God professed and he should profess each Sunday. Some of us just want to give up. Drew.
Darling, I want to allow you another breath.
I didn't get any hate mail regarding the transcript I shared with you last night of MJ Rosenberg and Joshua Holland about the refusal of American media to cover anything negative regarding Israel because they're terrified to do that, terrified of being labeled anti-Semites and Jew haters and so on and so forth. Matter of fact, got some very supportive email from people with apparent Jewish surnames, so I, you know, appreciate that. So, we okay now?
Sponsor.
Oh. Okay. Kathy's signaling me like crazy, and I didn't know what the hell she was talking about. I thought we were off the air. Well, okay. Yeah, as Irish Dave says, however, your Mossad file got bigger. Ah! One of the other things we've been talking about is, you know, the ignorance of white America regarding not just black America, but regarding the idea of racism, how you can only have racism when a dominant culture, a dominant race, institutes, legalizes, writes laws that makes legal bigotry and prejudice and violence and denial of human rights and so on and so forth. That's the difference between racism and just plain old bigotry. Well, by the way, before I forget, this hour is being sponsored by David Arietti. He writes, as an avid listener to your show for many years, I'd like to thank you for mentioning the problems challenging our environment. I want your listeners to know about two books that I wrote. First one, Prognosis Disaster, The Environment, Climate Change, Human Influences, Vectors, Disease, and the Possible End of Humanity. Whew. And my earlier book, The Earth is My Patient. These cover issues that you speak about frequently. Both are available on Amazon.com. Thank you for being an active voice for progressive ideas. I'm happy to help sponsor your program. Thank you, David. Titles of the books again. The first one is Prognosis Disaster, : The Environment, Climate Change, Human Influence, Vectors, Disease, and the Possible End of Humanity. I got to read that. And his earlier book, The Earth is My Patient. Find him on Amazon.com. All right, from Paul in Pahrump, Nevada. regarding that white America thing, Paul writes, I kind of resent being lumped in as part of, quote, white America, end quote. I am not part of what your last caller described in his terms as white America. He's referring to a black guy that called, said he was African-American from Memphis. I think it was Carl in Memphis, I think. Paul writes, is there more than one white America? Yes, I am Caucasian, and I guess that makes me white. But I'm not stupid. I'm not a right-winger. In my own terms, I'm not a racist. Never have been. I have an understanding of what it means to be an alien in this culture because I always have felt like an alien. There are lots of people, including yourself, who have white skin and are still aware of what is happening in this country and the world. Having a sense of alienation is what gives a person an understanding beyond race. I'm an artist and relish alienation. I'm sure you can rationalize that deep down. I'm racist. I've heard your argument about basically all whites are racist, even if they don't know it. All I'm saying is that that sweeping generalization, such as white America doesn't understand what's going on, shouldn't include all of us. Paul. I never meant it to include all of us, Paul. I said, first of all, if you are over a certain age, and I would probably put that line of demarcation somewhere around age 40, or maybe even 35, if you're over that age, you cannot help but being a racist because you were brought up, if you're white, you were brought up in a racist society whose institutions, culture, advertising, media, sports, everything was racist. Now, there were a couple of exceptions. You don't have to send me emails anymore about what's his name on I Spy, or what's his name who played for the Dodgers, or what's her name who had her own TV series. I can remember in the early 50s, Nat Cole had a TV series. Those were exceptions that proved the rule, proved it completely. So to be white in this society and over a certain age means that you were brought up in a society that was saturated in racism. And there was no way to escape it. It colored every thought you ever had. It colored your attitude about people, about institutions, about the culture. So if this is too subtle for some of the people who listen to the program, I understand. I really do. We'll be right back.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. And again, excuse me, this hour is being sponsored by David Arrieti. He writes, as an avid listener to your show for many years, I'd like to thank you for mentioning the problems challenging our environment. I want your listeners to know about two books that I wrote. First one is Prognosis Disaster, The Environment, Climate Change, Human Influences, Vectors, Disease, and the Possible End of Humanity. That's a real grabber. And my earlier book, The Earth is My Patient. These two books cover issues that you speak about frequently. Both are available at Amazon.com. Thank you for being an active voice for progressive ideas. I'm happy to help sponsor your program. Thanks, David. Thank you very much. Another email from Crispin in Seattle. subject line is a little something for religion night. Actually, it's church night, Crispin, but that's okay. I liked your email. Here's what Crispin wrote. Dear Mike, I attended my first funeral when I was 5 years old. My family, both immediate and extended, largely consisted of independent Baptists, i.e., fundamentalists of the Dominionist variety. And it consisted overwhelmingly of very elderly people who died at the rate of 5 or 6 a year. Because most of these folks were the patriarchs and matriarchs of various family branches, and furthermore, because one's death represented the pious soul's leap into God's arms, funerals were of the utmost importance to my kin. During my first funeral, as Brother Leon vomited a 2-hour eulogy, I came to notice that a distinct breathing sound formed the assembly's undercurrent. I couldn't tell if one of my relatives was breathing in a particularly labored way or if there was something wrong with the church's air conditioning, but I was definitely hearing something very real and very strange. Throughout the next 2 or 3 funerals, I found myself hearing the same sound, the unmistakable the unmistakable noise of heavy breathing. Each time I kept looking around the chapel to see if I could locate the source, but no dice. Finally, at the end of my 4th or 5th funeral, I summoned up the courage to speak to Brother Leon and ask if he knew where the sound came from. He very solemnly led me to the open casket, lifted up the casket's skirt, and revealed a sort of billows contraption affixed to a small motor. I was utterly confused. However, Brother Leon deigned to enlighten me and told me that the bellows was always turned on during the services. The sound of breathing, he added, coming from the immediate area of the coffin, was there to further comfort the bereaved. Being a naive young child of 5, I accepted his explanation and moved on with life. Years later, I happened to come across a horror movie on television. I think it was one of the Hammer horror films. And a scene in the picture featured almost exactly the same type of machine and the same explanation. I happened to be watching this movie with my girlfriend Michelle, who was raised a moderate Methodist, and she completely freaked out. She thought that such a device was the heart and soul of creepy. I, for my own part, wasn't terribly put off by the scene, but Michelle's reaction was the first hint that something was desperately wrong with my family. Somewhat later, I found that virtually no one else on the planet observes such a tradition, but it continues to live on in the remains of my family. Religion seems to invariably provoke such bizarre actions, no? Sincerely, Crispin in Seattle. What? Something out of a haunted house. Well, no. Now, when I read this, all of a sudden, I flashed on some kind of a dim, distant memory of my own. Nothing that I could, form a mental image of. But there was something about Crispin's email, like, oh, wait a minute. Wait. And how you will reach, I don't know where your memory machine started leaving a trail. I have memories that when my mother was living, she said, well, you couldn't remember that. That happened when you were 2.5. Okay. But, you start to form some solid memories, depending on the shock value, I guess, of the event, at very early age. Some people maintain that even we all carry memories of being born. We just have buried it deeply. And it only reemerges when we start to die. You know, that shooting down the tunnel and the light at the end and friendly faces waiting for you. I mean, if that doesn't sound like being born, what does? But I digress. So I read Crispin's email and I thought, that is familiar. What's, where, what, where did I, who, but it was gone. So I have no idea. So thank you, Crispin, in Seattle, Washington, for a very, very interesting email. And I just, you know, the laughter is certainly not meant to be derisive or, I'm not trying to be a prick, you know. I just find it, there's something about that story that is just funny. Nikki Haley, who's the Republican governor of South Carolina, has vetoed a Democratic-sponsored bill aimed at providing seventh graders with a free HPV vaccine. The measure was supported by both Democrats and Republicans, and a vote to fund this was 63-40 in the South Carolina House and 40-2 in the Senate. Those were plus votes in support of this initiative. But yesterday, Nikki vetoed the bill, calling the bill unnecessary and, quote, a precursor to another taxpayer-funded health care mandate, end quote. State Representative Bakari Sellers, a Democrat, who sponsored the bill, blasted Haley's move, calling her decision one that, quote, puts her own selfish political ambitions ahead of the people of South Carolina. Sellers said in a statement, quote, this bill had bipartisan support and gives optional education and preventive vaccines to adolescents in an effort to thwart cervical cancer. This is a common sense approach to a very serious problem. To call this measure unnecessary is demeaning and insulting to the heroic women who fight this cancer every day. I'm deeply disappointed that politics once again has prevailed over women's health, end quote. Now, what's interesting about the story is Nikki Haley, who vetoed this, back in 2007, when she was a state rep, she co-sponsored a bill authorizing mandatory HPV vaccinations for seventh grade girls. Not option. See, under this new bill, parents had the option. But Nikki Haley, when she was a representative in South Carolina, sponsored a bill that required forced vaccination of the HPV vaccine. Now, she eventually killed the bill when she realized it didn't include an opt-out for parents. But this new version did give parents the ability to opt out if they didn't want their kids to get it. Haley said yesterday, referring to her sponsorship of this back in 2007, she said it was a mistake then. I've said it's a mistake now. Now that I have a 14-year-old daughter, it is something that is very close to my heart in terms of what I'm going to do as a parent and what I want for my child, end quote. Republicans want people to die, even their own children. They want as much death as they can possibly bring to this tired old planet. They want things to die. They want the environment to die. They want mountaintops to be blown away and made dead. They want the sea dead. They want everything dead because right-wingers believe that in making everything dead, their crazed messiah will show up and say, you did good. You killed everything. Every goddamn thing on earth is killed. Yes. Yes! Yes!
My endurance.
go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by David Arietti, whose message is, as an avid listener to your show for many years, I would like to thank you for mentioning the problems challenging our environment. I want your listeners to know about two books that I wrote. The first one is Prognosis Disaster, The Environment, Climate Change, Human Influences, Vectors, Disease, and the Possible End of Humanity. And my earlier book, The Earth is My Patient. These two books cover issues that you speak about frequently. Both are available at Amazon.com. Thank you for being an active voice for progressive ideas. And I'm happy to help sponsor your program. Thanks, David. Thank you, David. Prairie 2 in the subject line tonight says this piece is kind of dense, but you learn the stuff or you die. Okay. Prairie 2 writes, he's our economic affairs correspondent. The stock market closed on a down note today, showing their disappointment in the newest Federal Reserve actions. The markets were hoping for a massive new money printing scheme to pump hot cash into the financial services Ponzi scheme. The European Central Bank has pledged €1 trillion to prop up Spain and Italy, or more accurately, they are trying to mitigate the damage done by the big transnational banks. In reality, it's just a Band-Aid on a severed limb. The end of the euro and the return to a regulated banking system is the only answer. But Germany, who is currently the big winner, opposes this. The new socialist-dominated government in France sees things differently. So, Wall Street was hoping for something similar here. Instead, all they got was a six-month extension of Operation Twist. It's named after that contemporary dance step. Contemporary? That was an old stodgy old banker joke. Oh, okay. Remember Chubby Checker? Give you a hint. He and Mike Malloy are contemporaries. Lincoln, too, I think. Anyway, the Fed did the same thing back then to deal with a recession at the time. What they did was buy up short-term bonds using money they basically just printed. They then sold these short-term bonds into the market. At the same time, they bought long-term bonds with the effect of driving down long-term interest rates in the markets. It sounds overly complicated because it is. This is only necessary because we believe, quote-quote, in the free, quote-quote, market, but we don't really believe, quote-quote, because we're spending trillions to rescue the, quote-quote, free market. The only thing that would be worse is if we took the libertarian view seriously and just let them all go under. Were we to let the, quote, free market, end quote, deal with it by failing, well, can you say Armageddon? Seizing the big banks, liquidating their assets over time, and putting all the Republicans in prison would actually solve these problems. It'll take a lot more Americans understanding these concepts for that to actually happen. The Fed's rock and roll bond program has driven down home mortgage rates to all-time lows, even if most people can't qualify for a mortgage. Just the same, there's actually some glimmer of hope in the housing market with new building permits at a four-year high. This uptick is being driven by real growth in the blue states, but is being dragged down by, at the same time, by the senseless austerity of the red states. I'm conflicted between the realization of our potential in this age of fantastic scientific knowledge and at the same time depressed to the point of despair by the ascendance of people who don't believe science. They prefer to return to an age of feudalism and superstition. And I don't mean the fun kind when nerds dress up in chainmail. People like Mitt Romney don't quite grasp that in a world of nobility and dragons, they would be the ones in black. Or maybe they do and they just don't care. Prairie2.com, Bruce Enberg's site. Learn this stuff or die. Okay. Learn this stuff or die. Oh, my God. I mean, wow. We always enjoy getting Prairie 2's missives. All right, where were we before we were so rudely interrupted here? Oh, we were here. The trial in Philadelphia on clergy abuse charges pending against two Roman Catholic priests was halted today. The jury, a divided jury, will have the day off to dwell on these charges. The jury deliberated for several hours today after telling a Philly judge that they were at an impasse on four of the case's five charges. The panel won't meet Thursday because the jury has a family conflict, the judge said. Now, what this is all about, juries are weighing criminal charges against a priest and a church supervisor. This is the first U.S. church official charged over his handling of abuse complaints. Monsignor William Lynn is charged with conspiracy and child endangerment for allegedly helping the church cover up abuse complaints within the Philadelphia Archdiocese from 1992 to 2004. And the Reverend James Brennan is charged with trying to rape a 14-year-old boy. Oh, Jesus loves me, this I know. Oh, the old rugged cross, la la, la la la. Oh, wait a minute. They don't sing those hymns in the Catholic Church. I forgot. I'm sorry. All right. We will be back after the break here at the top of the hour. Church Night continues. Plus, we have important things to talk about, too. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Chris Shapar. Chris writes, it's my birthday, and listening to you fighting the flying monkeys is the best birthday present I can think of. Hope you can keep the fire lit for another year at least. Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I hope we can too, frankly. Republicans. Dirty, filthy, rotten Republicans. There's a 1,000-page so-called farm bill being, quote, debated, end quote, in the U.S. Senate. And as the Associated Press points out, that it's not a farm bill. Four of every $5 in the bill, roughly $80 billion a year, goes for groceries for one of every seven Americans through food stamps. It's not a farm bill. It's a food stamp bill. And what do you suppose Republicans want to do to it? You're right. Of course. Republicans say that Congress could cut $2 billion a year just by closing a pair of loopholes that some states use to award benefits to people who otherwise might not qualify. you know, if you miss the cutoff point by a dollar, some states say, okay, we're going to award you food stamps anyway so you can live. But these filthy goddamn Republicans, these right-wingers, nah, let them starve. What did Pastor Hagee say? Starve! Starve! That bloated son of a bitch is going to be roasted in hell for sure. And all the little devils and demons, take a look at a Hieronymus Bosch painting and look at those little demons there. They will be eating him. Pastor Hagee. You know what I say to people who are hungry in America? Starve! Good old Christian there, huh? Senator Jeff Sessions, old marble mouth from Alabama. I want to talk like this. You know, I can't. It's very hard for me to talk. You know, I've got boogers and cotton in my mouth. If I'm from Alabama, I can't. The goofy-looking Jeff Sessions, who resembles a senator about the same way that Mickey Mouse resembles an astronaut. Jeff Sessions, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you, but me, you know.
What time you got there, Jeff?
Well, it's about 4:15, and it won't believe it.
No. What time is it?
Yeah, we're quite about that. Good bit.
Jeff Sessions, old marble mouth. He says, this is more than just a financial issue. It's a moral issue. He's one of the Republicans pushing for cuts in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's a moral issue. You see, if you get food stamps, you are immoral. You're not out there working in this great Republican economy that we've had for the past 10 years. What? It's Obama's economy? Ah, okay. Everything Obama has tried to do has been stopped. Just don't forget what Mitch McConnell said. What's your goal, Senator, for the session of the Senate?
Well, my goal is to make sure that Barack Obama is a one-term president, because blah people being a president. I mean, it's called the White House, isn't it? It's the White House, not the Negro House. It's the White House.
Him. The Agriculture Department credits the food stamp program with keeping about 5 million Americans out of poverty every year. Oh, but it's a moral issue, not a financial issue, not an eat issue, not a food issue, not feed our children issue. Hell no, it's a moral issue. If you're on food stamps, you're not going to be out there looking for work. You know, a hungry child is an alert child. Ask any school teacher how much fun it is to teach hungry children who come into class with their blood sugar so low, their heads pitch forward on the desks if they have them, and the kid falls asleep. Evil sons of bitches. I'll tell you the truth. I desperately want to see some sort of convolution, evolution, revolution in this country so that all Republicans are removed from everything and sent to a farm someplace and let them eat grass. I don't know. I hate them. I hate them. Before 2004, people received paper stamps or coupons worth $1, $5, $10. And since then, all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and Virgin Islands and Guam have moved to debit-type cards that allow recipients to authorize transferring their benefits from a federal account to retailer accounts. Now, who do you think runs that? Is that is that Chase? Does Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase run that and they take their cut? I think they do. Democrats led by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York are resisting a proposal by agriculture committee leaders in both parties to trim a modest $250 million from the program each year by cracking down on abuses. They say that would deprive about 500,000 households, losing an average $90 a month in food aid.
Now, Jeff Sessions points out that the federal government not spend twice as much on food stamps as it does on fixing the nation's roads and bridges, and that the food stamp program is now the government's second largest federal welfare program following Medicaid.
See, it's welfare if you want to eat in Republican madness, Republican world, see?
It's a welfare program. Besides, it's not moral to eat. Son, bitch, go get a job like me. I'm Senator Jeff Sessions. I'm just the dumbest son bitch in Alabama. That's why I'm a senator.
To qualify for food stamps, households, except those with elderly or disabled members, households must have gross incomes below 130% of the poverty line. The Agriculture Department, which runs the program, says the average monthly benefit per person as of last November was $134 a month. Is that $32 a week? As for helping the economy, Agriculture Department calculates that each dollar in benefits generates $1.72 in economic activity, including 16 cents for farmers who grow the food.
That's a moral issue. It's not a money issue. It's a moral issue. I'm Jeff Sessions, and I got cow dung all up here in my false teeth. I got cotton and boogers in my teeth here. It's a moral issue. See, you can't have people getting food stamps. Don't I look like a goofy bastard? Look at me. I'm Jeff Sessions. Look at me. Hell, every morning I get up and look in the mirror, I just laugh my ass off. I just think, Lord, you sure did pull a trick on me, didn't you? Jesus.
Republicans. Republicans need to be ended.
Lib Talker says Republicans need to be ended.
Oh, you want to hear about the craziest damn thing to arise out of this anti-Obama stuff? I'll tell you when we come back. You're not going to believe this.
Mike Malloy.
Okay, the damnedest thing here, you know, again, like I've said many times on this program, it's Obama's policies that drive me insane. It's just... It's hard to deal with this president for me, unless I get all, you know, clinical about it and just say, nah, to hell with it. He's just another corporatist, which I've said many times. But, you know, he is so articulate. And given what we have had in the office of the presidency for so many years, I mean, Clinton was kind of articulate, but Clinton was just so effed up. I mean, you know, you talk about a man who just, what Well, no point pursuing that. You know what I'm talking about. But if you go to George Jr. And then drop back to George Sr. and then go to Reagan, and I guess Carter, and then Ford, and, you know, all these people. I mean, these were clowns. This was a clown act. And then you look at what the Republicans threw up against the wall to see what would stick during the primary season. A clown act. And then you get somebody like Obama, who is a smart man, very intelligent man, very good speaker. Love the way he speaks. I love what he talks about. It's just a damn shame he doesn't follow through on anything, but I'm getting way off track here. The really crazy white people in this society are just, I mean, it's like somebody, I don't know, it's like somebody got into their bedrooms and poured fire ants in their beds, and when they got to bed, these fire ants just went, shoom! You know, just started eating them, biting the hell out of them. I mean, these fools are acting like fools. You understand what I'm saying here about this, some of these caucasoids who are just going nuts over Obama? And they don't go after his policies. Because the sad fact is most Obama policies benefit Republicans. If they would just shut their goddamn mouth, sit down, and just vote for the stuff he's tossing out there. Or the stuff he's proposing. Write the legislation. But don't forget. Don't forget what, you know, what Mitch McConnell said. You know, our goal, make sure he's just one-term president. And then Marble Mouth, Jeff Sessions, and all these idiots. Well, here's the latest. The top election official in Arizona, the Secretary of State, the guy who was getting into that birther bull hockey, has moved on to something even crazier involving Barack Obama. According to TPM Muckraker, Secretary of State Ken Bennett says he's convinced Obama was born in Hawaii, but he now believes President Obama fraudulently claimed to be born in Kenya so he could get into college. He also believes Obama has spent millions of dollars since then to cover it all up. Now, remember who this freak ass is, Ken Bennett. He is Mitt Romney's co-chair in Arizona. And he made these moronic comments at an event where he pleaded for local Republicans to unite behind Romney. He told them that a world under Obama, quote, is just very, very scary. And then he went on to say, now I know there's a lot of people that are very skeptical as to whether he was born in Hawaii. Personally, I believe that he was. I actually believe he was fibbing about being born in Kenya when he was trying to get into college and doing things like writing a book and on and on and on. What would this freak ass know about writing a book? What do you know about writing a book, boy? Come here. You talking to me? I'm the Secretary of State. Come here. What do you know about book writing? President Obama wrote a book. Yeah, he wrote more than one. What do you know about book writing? I mean, these are some fools. These are some sucker fools of the highest degree. These are 32nd degree fools. These fools get rings. They are so stupid. He made up the fact that he was born in Kenya. When the hell did Obama say he was born in Kenya? But according, and this guy is a Secretary of State.
Well, see, he made up that part about being born in Kenya so he could get into the, where'd he go to school, that their Harvard place? Or was it that their Yale place? One of them their places.
How do people like this... I mean, how do the people like this survive? Why didn't his parents just kill him in the crib? Why didn't they look at him and go, oh, dear God, get rid of this guy quick. But he's just a baby. I don't know. He's weird. Get rid of him. Smother him. Oh. Yeah, Obama was born in Hawaii, but Obama fraudulently claimed to be born in Kenya so he could get into college. One of these days, I am going to go so far up somebody's head, like one of these fools, so far upside their head, I'm going to be standing on top of their head, looking down at these jerks and saying, are you as crazy as you seem? Stomp, 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 stomp!
Like you bite, but me.
Before the hour, this hour being sponsored by Chris Schaffhauer. Chris's message: it's my birthday, and listening to you fighting the flying monkeys is the best birthday present I can think of. Hope you can keep the fire lit for another year at least. Well, happy birthday, Chris, and thank you very much for the sponsorship. And I will hope right along with you. Ken Bennett, Secretary of State in Arizona, Ken Bennett. He's convinced Obama was born in Hawaii, but he thinks the president fraudulently claimed to be born in Kenya so he could get into college. And Obama has spent millions, millions of dollars to cover it all up. I don't get these people. I claim no relationship to them at all. They are not my fellow Americans. They are not, this guy is not a man. He's not a Caucasoid. He's a goddamn freak. I mean, a freak of nature. This guy's mother was a tree stump, and his father was, I don't know what, a lizard. Bennett said, so if there was weird stuff going on, I think it was actually happening back in his college days, because I think he has spent $1.5 or $2 million through attorneys to have all the college records and all of that stuff sealed. So if you're spending money to seal something, that's probably where the hanky-panky was going on. And you know what? I love to pick flies off the wall and eat them. And I'll tell you something else, too. Do you know that there are strange people that follow me, and they're all dressed in white, and they don't have eyes? There are no eyes, and I know that they're from Obama, and I know that they're out to get me, because I know the truth. I know that Obama has spent $1,964,827 and flip, 98 cents to cover it all up. I know. I'm the Arizona Secretary of State. I am insane. Would you like to see my tattoo? Look here. Look under my eyelid. Look. You see that? That's the secret code. The secret code to what? It's the secret code that keeps me alive. Okay. Jesus God. Bennett went on to say that he's not really interested in defeating the president on a technicality, like he was, you know, lied about being a Kenyan. He says, quote, we're not going to win this election based on whether he was born in Hawaii or not. We are going to win this election because our country has to change directions, or we are quickly headed to a point where we are not going to be able to recover. Do you want to see me catch a fly? Watch. Wait. See? I got it. So, where's my jar?
Bring me my jar.
Unscrew, unscrew, unscrew. Screw, 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 screw.
How about that? I'm the Arizona Secretary of State, and I catch flies with my hand. I wasn't using anything there. I just grabbed it.
Oh, my God. I mean, it is complete madness. Complete insanity. How did Republicans go bat guano crazy like this? What is it? You know, I get way too far into this. Like, I shouldn't give a tinker's damn about how insane these people are, except for one horrific reality, and that is they vote each other into office, and they make decisions that affect everybody. And, you know, to hell with the economy, to hell with corporatism, to hell with predatory capitalism, to hell with the fact that the planet's exploding and dying at the same time. Why aren't millions of people in the street protesting these droids that have taken over the Republican Party and are trying desperately to eat their way into the Democratic Party? I mean, aren't you people concerned? You want to see me catch a fly with my hand? I'm quick. Man. The Senate, I don't know how they voted, but today was the day they were supposed to vote on a Republican proposal to stop the Environmental Protection Agency from putting into place new rules that would reduce the amount of dangerous pollutants such as mercury, lead, and arsenic emitted from coal-burning power plants. Which, if this bill were passed, it would save about 100,000 people from heart attacks and asthma attacks every year. But no, lawmakers backing the proposal to kill the EPA ban. And it's led by this other bug-eating son of a bitch from Oklahoma, James Inhofe. They claim that the rules are part of the Obama administration's job-killing war on coal. Did you know that? Obama is waging a war on coal. Holy Christ, really? What's next? A war on Pepto-Bismol! The EPA, whose voice is getting fainter and fainter as it's slowly smothered, the EPA says the rules will create jobs and save lives. And more than a dozen mainstream health groups, including the American Lung Association, the American Heart Association, agree with the EPA. The rules are known as mercury and air toxic standards. They might require power plants to install or upgrade pollution control technology, such as smokestack scrubbers.
Job killers! A war on coal! Obama is waging war on coal!
You can hear that, but you can't hear the other part, can you?
Tennessee Republican Senator Lamar Alexander, remember him? He's come out in support of the EPA emission rules. Uh-oh, well, that ends his career. Let's get some teabagger, Rufus Dumbass, to run against Lamar Alexander. Well, you know, Lamar Alexander's out of touch with what the people of Tennessee really want.
You watch, it'll happen.
Anyway, Lamar Alexander, Republican senator from Tennessee, came out in support of EPA emissions rules. Alexander has been criticized by fellow conservatives over his support of the rules, and he's the target of a nasty attack ad on the subject. Of course, they'll find some knuckle-dragging, booger-eating teabagger to run against Lamar Alexander, because Lamar Alexander said, quote,
Knoxville, Tennessee has been the worst city in the country for asthma 3 times in the past 8 years. Chattanooga is 5th. The Great Smoky Mountains, they're one of the most polluted national parks in the country. We ought to do something.
Why, you dirty commie?
Alexander also says he believes that these rules, the mercury and air toxic standards rules that the EPA wants to enforce, are pro-coal, not anti-coal, because pollution control equipment guarantees that coal will continue to be part of America's clean energy portfolio. Republicans want you dead. Do you understand this? They want you dead. They want your mama dead. They want your children dead. They want your grandma dead. They want your goofy-ass uncle hiding up in the attic. They want him dead. They want your family pet dead. They want everybody dead. That's why they vote this way. Dead.
We're out here trying to kill everybody because what we're trying to do is make sure that Barack Obama is just one-term president. I'm Mitch McConnell, and I said that back when president was first elected. Well, he's not really president, but when he was first elected, and we said that our agenda was to make sure he's one-term president. You know what? We're just about ready to do that too. Do I look like a turtle? You know, my father was a turtle. My mother was, I don't know what she was, but my father was a turtle. That's why I look the way I do, and that's why I talk the way I do. Now I got to go. I got to go find me some, something to eat. Before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Chris Shapar. It is Chris's birthday. And the message is, and listening to you fighting the flying monkeys is the best birthday present I can think of. Hope you can keep the fire lit for another year at least. Thanks, Chris, and happy birthday. Thank you very much. Republicans want you dead. Right-wingers want you dead, your children dead, your family pet dead. Now it is an attack led by James Inhofe, this freak from Oklahoma, in his attempt and the Republicans' attempt to stop the EPA from implementing new rules that would reduce the amount of mercury, lead, arsenic that comes belching and burping and flowing out of coal-burning power plants. This is one of the things that Bob Kincaid has spent a good part of his life fighting against also. The EPA says the rules will create jobs and save lives, but Inhofe is such an ignorant son of a bitch and just can't stand the fact that there is a black man in the White House. Now, here's a part of this story that just, it just kills me, as Holden Caulfield would say. It just kills me. The opponents of these rules say that some of the country's oldest power plants will be forced to shut down. or improve, put in smokestack scrubbers, you sons of bitches.
I mean, that's simple. And lay off workers because they won't be able to afford upgrades to comply with the new standards. Oh, really? There's a coal plant that generating a power plant that can't afford? Are you kidding me? Oh, Inhofe, you're such a moron. Now, here's the part that is that just kills me. As Mike Ludwig, writing a truth out, here's how he puts it. With apparent disregard for the views of public health, a group of Republican lawmakers who happen to be doctors sent a letter to President Obama about, quote, the health impacts of unemployment, end quote. The letter claims that if these rules are implemented, quote, it will be disastrous in ways not seen since the Great Depression, end quote. What? These are doctors? Pull their goddamn medical licenses. These are not doctors. These are quacks. What do you want to bet that they're all from the South?
What's the matter? You got a splinter in your finger? Come over here. I'm going to cut your goddamn finger off. We got to get rid of that splinter.
The EPA estimates that implementing these rules will create 46,000 short-term construction jobs and 8,000 long-term utility jobs. The value of the air quality and public health improvements alone is expected to total between $37 and $90 billion annually. National Resource Defense Council senior attorney Jack Walk on his blog said, quote, comparing these rules to the Great Depression is over the top and preposterous, even by deteriorated Washington rhetorical standards.
Senator Inhofe bypassed the committee with his proposal to squash the standards.
Under a provision of the Congressional Review Act, under that law, a lawmaker can bypass the committee by gathering 30 senators to support a proposal to challenge rules set by regulators, like the EPA. Now, if the rule is disapproved, you know, this attempt to get mercury and what else? Mercury and lead and arsenic and stuff that will kill you and kill your baby and kill your mama and kill your grandma and kill your auntie and kill your family pet. But no, the Republicans want everybody dead. But if the rule is disapproved under this Review Act trick, the EPA may not issue similar rules in the future. That's how these rules are written. And the White House claims the EPA may never be able to set future mercury limits if Inhofe's proposal is approved. Oh, by the way, in case you weren't aware, coal-burning power plants are the biggest producers of mercury pollution in the country. Mercury collects in watershed ecosystems and fish. And a 2009 study by the U.S. Geological Survey, another one of them commie organizations, found that every single fish tested in 300 streams and rivers across the country was contaminated with mercury. I'm telling you something, truth seekers. These goddamn filthy right-wingers want you dead. They want your children dead. They want your family pet dead. They want you blind, deaf, unable to speak, unable to walk. They want to see nerve damage. They want to bring everything to a death-dealing end. The Republicans, like so many of these evangelical Christians, these dominionists, these are death cults. That's all they're interested in, is death, death, death. No fun, no joy, no taking care of the planet, no taking care of each other. Just give them death. They don't even want the liberty. Not give me liberty or give me death. It's give me death and more death. We're right wingers. Death, death. We want to see everything dead and rotting and filthy. We're going to open up the phone lines in case you want to call in after the break. these Republican clowns in the Senate who are doctors who wrote a letter saying that improving the quality of the air will make people lose their jobs and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, as the question, how can Republican doctors do that? They ought to lose their licenses. Well, Lee in New York City reminds me, remember Republican Dr. Bill Frist, who diagnosed Terri Schiavo as being able to recover? And he did that from watching videotape, remember? And then she up and died! Republicans are all about death. Now, I have somebody who identifies himself as a teabagger here from Longwood, Virginia. I don't know if I want to take his call or not. Because I don't like teabaggers. What to do? All right, I'll give it a shot. Eddie?
Hey, Mike, you're hilarious, man. Does everyone know that this is really you're really a Tea Party member and this is a conspiracy?
Your
insanely irrational vitriol is just designed to discredit progressives.
How am I wrong?
I think you should be on the afternoon because we love listening to you.
Well, good. I'm glad because you people are putting money in my pocket.
Well, it must not be too much money at midnight.
Oh, I'm making millions of dollars, Eddie. Now, listen, you called to tell me that I'm wrong on death. Tell me how I'm wrong about death.
Well, I can respond to that the same way I respond to that guy on the corner that yells at
you. No. Now, Eddie, I'm going to put you on hold. If you listen to the program a lot, you know how the rules are. Right now, you're in my house. You will show respect in my house or I will kick your ass out the front door and you'll be gone. So if you want to show respect, Eddie, I'm going to ask you the question one more time. You told Kathy that you're a Teeth Party and that I'm wrong on death. So tell me, Eddie, before I kick your ass out the front door, how am I wrong on death?
Oh, we all love to kill everyone. We're a Tea Party, and we love death there, Mike.
No. Now, Eddie, you're getting close. My foot is itching to plant it right upside your butt. I'm telling you, you said I'm wrong on death where it concerns Republicans. Tell me how. Last chance. Go ahead.
How can I do
that? Okay, goodbye. Bow! Right up the ass there, Eddie. How'd that feel, her boy? Jesus God, that's a teabagger. That's a teabagger. These creeps can ever just see what I'm saying? Do you people have been listening to this program for 5, 10, 15, 20 years? You know the rap now. Over and over and over again, I let these vermin come on the program. I give them a chance. They tell Kathy they want to say X, and then they get on and try to get slick with me, not realizing, look, Eddie, fool, I control the buttons here. Do you people not realize that? Do you not realize that all I have to do is plant my size 10 1/2 right up your butt and you're gone? And I give you chance after chance after chance. How can you people be so stupid? I just don't get it. You, Jesus God. Oh, well, never mind. Eddie, if you ever get the sense God gave a pissant and you want to call back in and act like a normal human being, I might let you back on. But just remember something. When you call this program, dude, you're coming into my house. What if I came into your house and started insulting you and saying garbage and crap and peeing on your lawn furniture? You know, that fold-up stuff that you have in your living room. How would you feel about that? When you grab your gun and say, I'm going to stand my ground on this liberal. Wouldn't you do that? Jesus God, I don't get these people. Gary is in Minneapolis, this is on KTNF.
Oh, God, I have to follow that?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. What I called about is, it's sort of, I wanted to discuss about how you saying, you know, you don't really understand why there's not millions of people out there.
Right, right, right.
And stuff, and I'll just give you the background. Cause
okay.
And stuff. Well, maybe you're familiar with my voice, and I've called up and told you about my situation, where my mother used to be in the anti-war movement. And
right.
She died and
yes.
stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened was, you know, when they diagnosed the cancer, she called up some of her old anti-war friends, and they would come out and visit once in a while when she was in the nursing home because mm-hmm. she had a stroke for a while and stuff, but they would never call me. And then after she died, I didn't really hear from anybody, but I had a little inheritance for a while, so mm-hmm. I was trying to get through my situation. And so what I ended up doing once was the woman that wrote Nickel and Dimed, Barbara Ehrenreich or something.
Barbara Ehrenreich?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
She was doing a thing for one of her books, so I went down there and I said, you know, what do you do if you're, you know, kind of in your situation? I was sort of vague and stuff, and she said, you know, people should get together.
Right.
So while I was doing that, I did that, and then after it was over, a couple people came up and talked to me. It was kind of nice. And then one of these people, it was this guy from, they were called the Minnesota 8. They were draft resistors.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had gone up, back in the day when they were in jail, she had gone up and visited them, wrote them letters, brought them stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And in the corner of my eye while I was talking to these people, he just walked out and didn't say a damn thing. And it's kind of like sometimes I feel like, you know, I have to battle what I have to battle with in my situation to keep my head above water.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of like you have to battle the apathy of the people around you that you would think are supposed to would help you or something like that. And they don't. And then what it does is it sort of just makes you cynical. You say, well, you know, I used to go when the Iraq War was on, I was in better shape. I used to go to the anti-war protests and do stuff like that. But it just kind of leaves you cynical. And then when you hear people, you know, when you talk about the stuff like, you know, the global warming and stuff that could take us all out, it's almost like, well, I guess if it takes us all out, at least they don't have to put up with the apathy of it.
Well, that's certainly one way to look at it, Gary. I would I probably would prefer some kind of extreme activity to apathy. I understand what you're saying. Gary, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. All right? Take care. Spike is in Salt Lake City listening on XM. Hey, Spike.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
All right. How are you?
Yeah. There's two things I wanted to talk about. Basically, I want to refute the absurd notion of religion about free will. But before I do that, I work in our grocery store, and I ran across some, you know, attractive women LDS missionaries, and we started talking, and I asked them, hey, do you get any cat fights with Christian evangelicals? And they just looked at me and laughed, and I was laughing a whole minute. But to get on my point about this, you know, free will business and gay marriage.
Now, wait a second. What's a cat fight?
Oh, okay. Well, that's just an old you know, an old saying, you know, when two women fight with other women.
Well, isn't that just a fight?
No, it was called a cat fight back in the 50s and in the 60s. You know, when we were growing up, you know, when two women get into a fight, it was called a cat fight.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was, you know, 50s and 60s slang.
Hey, hold on a second, Spike. I've got to take a break here. I'm going to look that up while we're in a break. Cat fight. Cat fight.
I'm running around.
It's Mike Malloy.
Anybody understand that? 21 past the hour. Okay. All right, Spike, where were we?
Okay, it's Mike, not Spike.
Oh, it's Mike.
Okay. Yeah, I'm the agnostic that regularly, calls in.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, okay. Well, what it is the 50s and 60s slang word. Back in those days...
Catfight.
Yeah, women were told it's unladylike to fight, but for two men to fight, that's, the normal masculine role.
Yeah, gotcha.
And I just asked those Mormon women, do you get into any cat fights with the Christian evangelical women?
Right.
And they looked at me and laughed, and I laughed too. I was just making, light of the fact I think it's religion is stupid to say that my church is the right church and everybody else is going to hell. That's what I was making light of.
Okay,
but my main reason for calling you, Mike, is to talk to you about, the absurdity of free will, connected with gay marriage. I got into another debate with a Catholic priest, two or three days ago about gay marriage. He pulls out the free will and the free choice card on me.
Yeah.
And I told him, hey, look, we do make choices in life, but they are predetermining reasons why you make choices. For example, no one wants to walk in fire because it hurts and it's going to cost you a lot of money. And plus, I told him, now look, science, psychological science, the B.F. Skinner School has demonstrated that a lot of our behavior is based on the consequences in the environment. For example, I don't want to engage in sexual harassment. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to get no unemployment. And I don't want to do it because because I happen to like the women that I work with.
Uh-huh.
And then I further told them, I said, I bet you dollars for donuts before you and I die that, psychological science is going to establish the fact that being gay is in your DNA, and once again, you religious people are going to be proven wrong.
Yeah. All right. Well, I agree with that, Spike. Mike, I do, and I thank you for checking in, Mike. Take care. Oh, my God. Who's this on line one? Another teabagger? Are you kidding me? Bruce?
Yeah, Mike.
Welcome to the program, Bruce.
Well, I'm not a teabagger.
Ladies and gentlemen, Prairie 2 is on the line here. Oh, my God, the last time something like this happened, a star appeared in the east. What's up, Bruce?
Well, actually, it was the solstice. It's the solstice again, so I'm calling in.
The last time you called was the solstice, too?
Yep.
Winter or sun or summer?
Well, it was winter then.
It was winter.
So. Yeah.
Well, what did I do to deserve this call from our economic affairs correspondent?
Well, no, it's just that I come up every solstice. I come up and take air samples. Come up out of the bunker, and I can get cell service from up on the surface.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay.
I just thought it might be fun. Although listening to all the other calls, it seems like I was in a court mandated therapy session where they just pass the phone around the circle.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what this show is all about. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Well, the phone is in your hand now. So what you got on your mind?
Well, actually, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
No, it's your phone call, dude. Go ahead.
But, you were talking about the Republicans want to cut off food stamps, which,
right,
of course, they'll do the first chance they get.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, why let people eat? If they're unemployed, they don't deserve to eat.
Well, if they actually did that, the sudden decline in supermarket sales would boost the food banks dramatically.
Well, that's true.
For a couple of months.
That's true. Hey, listen, I got to ask you this. Do you rotate the canned food on the solstice?
I have a continuous rotation.
You have a continuous. You know, I never know what to do with the food in our, you know, our emergency supply. I watch the dates. It's become obsessive. I don't know what to do. You know, I'll have a can of peas, and an expiration date will be like, for the sake of argument, 5/2012. Along about 2/2012, I start thinking, all right, we probably need to eat these peas, but I can't because it's in the emergency stash. And then it's 3/2012, and then it's 4/2012. And I really, my palms get sweaty, my feet start to itch and swell up, and I don't know what the hell to do. So now here it is 6/2012, and the damn can of peas is still sitting there. I don't know what to do.
Well, you know, as long as the can hasn't started to swell, you can still eat it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So that date doesn't really mean that much.
Well, it's an approximation of when it will start to deteriorate down to where it's sort of whatever it was.
Well, those bastards. So they put the date on there so that you go, oops, can't eat this, and throw it out and go get a new can. Okay. Hold on a second. I got to do some commercials, Prairie 2. Stay there. We're talking with Bruce Enberg, who is our economic affairs correspondent, who calls in on the solstice. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Two bumper music. How's that? We're talking with Bruce Enberg, a.k.a. Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent. Hey, Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
During the break, Reg over at TV News Live sent me a link here. Canned food studies and dry food studies. This is from Food and Drug Administration article about shelf life test. It was conducted on 100-year-old canned food. I didn't know they were canning food 100 years ago.
Oh, well, actually, Napoleon paid for the research on developing it. So
oh, good God.
It's 200 years old.
Well, here's a quick summary. Among the canned food items retrieved from the steamboat Bertrand in 1968 were brandied peaches, oysters, plum tomatoes, honey, and mixed vegetables. 6 years later, in 1974, chemists at the National Food Processors Association analyzed the products for bacterial contamination and nutrient value. Although the food had lost its fresh smell and appearance, the NFPA chemists detected no microbial growth and determined that the foods were as safe to eat as they had been when canned more than 100 years earlier. Now, it lost some nutrient. Vitamin C, vitamin A were lost, but protein levels remained high, and all calcium values, quote, were comparable to today's products, end quote. And then there's another one, another study, Canned Food Study 2, conducted by the Army, revealed that canned meats, canned vegetables, and jam were in excellent state of preservation after 46 years. I had no idea.
That's reasonable. I mean, the only reason that canned goods would deteriorate is a very low rate of chemical reaction that would be dependent on the temperature they were stored at.
Okay, well, problem solved.
You know, if you store them where it's cold, like at the bottom of a shipwreck at the bottom of the ocean, where it's near freezing, they'll keep for hundreds of years, I'm sure.
Well, that makes me happy because we have the stuff stored in what we jokingly refer to as our fruit cellar. And, there's just stacks of stuff. I never did that until you scared the hell out of me about 4 years ago. And I started, stockpiling canned goods. I've been tempted to go to one of those survival sites and buy the stuff where you just add water, but where in the hell are you going to get the water? Well, there's rainwater, I guess, you know.
Well, I mean, that's why you want to store some bleach, too, because you can sterilize almost any water, no matter what it looks like.
Yeah.
With bleach. And have some coffee filters you run it through first to take the chunks out before you add
yeah.
bleach.
Well, that's good. So how far are we from real Armageddon, not biblical crap or religious crap, but I mean, you know, political war, a collapse of systems. How far are we from Armageddon, Bruce?
Well, we're further away from it than we were 4 years ago. You know, when the Republicans ask, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? The definite answer to that is yes, we
yeah.
are better off.
But
no, now the underlying problem's been fixed. So, you know, we can go back to the abyss, the edge of the abyss anytime.
You don't think we're still on the edge?
Oh, we're a step or two back from it.
Oh.
I mean, some things have been done. I mean, you know, the question is, who's controlling the lever that drops you over the edge of the slide, you know?
Right. This sounds like a conversation with somebody from the Union of Concerned Scientists. You know, the atomic clock. You're 2 minutes to midnight. Okay, now you're 3 minutes. Okay, now you're 2 minutes, 47 seconds. I mean, what the hell difference does it make? That close to midnight, all somebody has to do is sneeze the wrong way, and foom, 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 there go the nukes.
Well, that, of course, that's true any time. An asteroid could slam into the planet tomorrow. I mean, they just had one go by last week that they didn't notice until it was only 2 or 3 days away that was big enough that probably would have wiped out half the life on Earth that hit us, you know, and it went by like, you know, what they say, 5 times the distance to the moon, which is quite a ways, but in really it's not.
About a million miles. How long ago did this one go by?
Last week.
You're kidding. Where in the hell
yeah.
was I? Oh, that's right. I wasn't here. Brad Friedman didn't tell me anything about this.
Yeah, well, they didn't know about it until like 2 or 3 days before it happened. You know, and it was all over the news. You could watch it on the internet on some telescope that was watching it from the Pacific.
Good
as
God.
It went by. You could see it from a moderate-sized telescope. The thing was, you know, the size of a city block or a little bigger and, you know.
As big as a city block?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that is an extinction-level event, isn't it?
Well, not quite. I mean, a little bigger than Tunguska, that one in Siberia some years ago.
Yeah.
You know, devastate half the planet, whichever side it hit on, you know. But, you know, there'd still be people around. We'd have to battle with giant cockroaches for control of the planet. But
That's true. And also some of the bugs, too. Oh, giant cockroach. You meant the bug. I thought you meant Republicans. Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. Well, so are you generally optimistic? You always, you know, when I'm going all negative on Obama, I have to tell the listeners this. Bruce will write me these emails, the very brief emails, that more or less say, I'm paraphrasing here, Bruce, more or less say, what the hell is wrong with you, Malloy? Things are not that bad. You know, why are you getting on Obama? You really think Obama is capable of, I don't know, capable of what?
Well, the thing is that, you know, we do have this three-branch government. You know, you can't really...
Well, on paper, we have it on paper, yeah.
Well, see, the Supreme Court has grabbed off this tremendous power.
Right.
You know, and we're going to find out tomorrow just how much power they think they have, because tomorrow they'll decide whether Obamacare lives or dies.
Oh, tomorrow's the day.
I believe tomorrow's the last day of the Supreme Court session, so any rulings that are going to come down will happen tomorrow.
Oh, my God, you'd think they'd wait till Friday.
I think Thursday's last day. They like their 3-day weekend.
All right. Well, this would be interesting. Well, it gives me a show topic for tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to come out tomorrow, unless they do something unprecedented.
Okay. Well, this will be. All right. Let me quickly get a prediction from you. Are they going to wipe the whole thing out, or just the mandate part?
I have no idea. We've been getting these mixed signals. The insurance corporations have been signaling that it's okay for them to wipe it out because they're going to continue on with all the good things that are mandated by it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've been saying that. So that suggest that they've given the Supreme Court permission to wipe it out. But on the other hand, they might just be giving cover to the Republicans who are now saying that they're going to keep all the good parts and just do away with the bad parts, which they can't name any bad parts.
Wait a minute, lost my train of thought. Hold on. Oh, yeah, what makes you or anyone think that we can trust... This is just a real knee slapper here, that we can trust insurance companies that they're going to keep the good parts. Like, they can't eliminate people because of pre-existing conditions, and kids can stay on their parents' policies till they're 26 or whatever it is. What makes you think that they're going to stick with that?
Nothing. that'll last about 10 minutes if the Supreme Court says they don't have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they'll wait till after the election to actually start implementing that. You know, the same way that after the 2008 elections, they immediately started laying off people.
Right.
You know, the outsourcing jobs $1 million a month, you know,
mm-hmm.
that they weren't doing before the election. I mean, that's how long it'll last.
I know that you always close a call from an undisclosed location, but I'm just wondering, where do you find the time to write so many of these massive, missives that you send into this program two or three times a week?
I don't actually have to work for a living.
Yeah.
So I have free time.
Yeah.
I mean,
You weren't an investment banker, were you?
No.
Oh, okay.
I did make some money the old-fashioned way by inheriting it, but not so much that I can live like Mitt Romney, but
right.
It does give me free time to do things if I really want to do them, like
write
ridiculous amounts of.
I take it by your email, Addie, that you live on a prairie somewhere.
I do live out in the middle of nowhere, that's true.
And what's the two indicative of? It's prairie two. Well, is there any significance to the numeral two?
Well, see, this all started way back when I just wrote you emails and you would read my email address, and
right.
That was, the two was because prairie without a numeral was taken.
Oh, I see.
And from the email server I was using at that time. So I've just kept it.
Oh, okay.
Because it was recognizable. I mean, it's there's no point in trying to pick a dramatic, expressive nom de plume, you know.
Sure,
You know, some kind of freedom fighter thing,
yeah.
Because
right.
they all sound the same.
Like,
I mean,
this
is oddball, so people actually can remember it.
Like Bruce the Engberg, you know, that just doesn't quite make it. You know, Robert the Bruce or Bruce the Engberg. All right, Bruce, we're out of time. Hey, listen, good to hear from you. Thank you so much. I'm very serious here for your contributions. I appreciate it. I wish I were a wealthy person. I'd pay you for it. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. Thanks a lot, Bruce.
Okay.
All right, man. Take care. Bruce Engberg, ladies and gentlemen, a.k.a. Prairie 2. Said it before, time just rips by when you're having fun, doesn't it? Huh? One more time, did y'all get your summer scent from Heal and Hollers? Did you get some of that stuff? If you didn't, you're going to make old Uncle Mike just a little bit irritated here. You've got to get some of this stuff. We were down in the Florida Panhandle, where they have mosquitoes. Well, they have bugs. I don't know what the hell they were. Big bugs. And you put some of the stuff on. Some are sent from Alice's restaurant, Alice's website. And it keeps everything away, except other folks. I mean, it is, if you haven't gotten it, it's made out of really good stuff and it smells good. It just makes you want to get close to one another and touch. Makes you want to get all naked and dance. And you can do that when you use this stuff because it keeps all the bugs away. That's all. I don't know why I brought that up. I'm not supposed to do commercials, but I love this stuff. Summer scent. From Raw Story, you know, Representative Peter King, this Republican racist freak from New York, keeps holding hearings on what he calls radical Islam. Radical Islam! They're coming! They're going to push Sharia law! Radical Islam! Well, Texas Congressman Al Green, a Democrat, said he wouldn't mind King continuously calling hearings on radical Islam if King would also conduct a hearing on the radicalization of Christians, radical Christianity. During a hearing today, the House Homeland Security Committee hearing on the radicalization of Muslim Americans, woohoo! Congressman Green wondered why the chairman had only focused on one religion. Al Green said, no, not the minister singer, but, you know, the congressman. Al Green said, if you agree that radicalization exists within all religions to some extent, would you kindly extend a hand into the air? Now, Green is the grandson of a Christian minister, and he asked the witnesses testifying before the committee to, you know, raise your hand if radicalization exists within all religions. He noted that all the hands are raised. And then Al went on to say, I don't think that most people oppose hearings on radicalization. I do not oppose hearings on radicalization. I do oppose hearings that don't focus on the entirety of radicalization. And if you agree, then we have Christians, as has been mentioned by more than one member, Christians who become radicalized, they become part of Islam and they become radicalized, as is being said, why not have a hearing on the radicalization of Christians? And then he added, I do think that is a problem of perception. People who see these hearings and never hear about the hearing on the radicalization of Christians have to ask themselves, why is this missing? Why don't we go to the next step and ask, how is that blue-eyed, blonde-haired, white female in the United States of America, how does she become so radicalized to the point of wanting to do harm to this country? You know, the Christians, we don't have that type of hearing, and that's the problem. Oh, my God. He closed by saying, I look forward to the day that we'll have that hearing that deals with radical Christians in America. Well, don't hold your breath, Al. You know, Peter King is a goddamn freak. I mean, you ever look at that guy? His eyes are too close together. And anytime you see somebody with eyes that close together, watch out. Hide the sharps. Don't let the guy in your house. Don't even get near him. Don't walk past him. If you see him coming, run past him. Better yet, run the other way. People with their eyes too close together are mass killers. Trust me on this. I know what I'm talking about. All right? Michael is in Atlanta listening on Sirius. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Mr. Malloy. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I'm not doing that great with what these Republicans are doing to Eric Holder, and I'm going to tell you something.
Okay.
If they don't start playing the same games that the Republicans do when they get into power, they're going to lose my vote. Nancy Pelosi, when we took over power, she said, oh, no, impeaching Bush is off the table. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Right.
You know, why do they constantly turn the other cheek only to get smacked by these assholes?
Now be careful your language. I don't know if you can say that, but that's okay. We'll let it slide. It's almost midnight.
You know, I just don't understand why they keep on thinking that the Republicans are going to change. I mean, all they do is...
Well, they're not.
They're dirty chicks.
Right. That's my whole argument with Obama early on, before I started to realize that some of his policies were as bad or in some cases worse than Bush's. And it was his belief, I guess because of who he is, I guess because of how he grew up, I guess because of the racial mix that is Barack Obama. I think where it concerns politics, he tries to be someone who can find reconciliation between two opposing ideas. And I guess he wasn't listening when some freak like Mitch McConnell said that their single objective, and thanks, Michael, we're just out of time here. Their single objective was to make him a one-term president. After the 2010 election, it was my suggestion that Obama just take the gloves off and say, okay, fools, you want to fight? I'll give you a fight of your life. But, you know, no, he didn't do that. You know, he's talking about how, well, you know, maybe we could change some things. I'll tell you what to change, Mr. President. You don't ever bring a knife to a gunfight. That's all I can tell you, right? You understand what I'm saying there? Okay. I'll see y'all tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.